2018, and very, very busy with lots of bills roaming around our chamber. So this is very good. The people are active as are us legislators. Members, today we're going to be hearing two bills and then the summer report from the department in regard to all the reports that over the years the legislature has requested of the department. So I'm going to bring to the table, first of all, Representative Linda Runbeck and those who have come primarily to start off the testimony on dyslexia, because our meeting can come officially to order. We have quorum. Ms. Liffey will note the roll, please. And Representative Bennett, would you look over the minutes so we can approve those before we proceed?
I have had the chance to look over the minutes, Madam Chair, and I move the minutes.
Representative Bennett moves approval of the minutes from February 27. Are there any additions or corrections or any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. So then, members, as I was saying, we have two bills before us, one that deals with dyslexia and training of teachers, and another that deals with a special education working group. And then we will hear, as I said, the summer report from the department. Welcome, Representative Runbeck, if you would bring whomever you want to begin with to the table. And members, you will notice in your folder, your green transparent folder, that there is a testimony from a special education teacher, a teacher support handout, a Decoding Dyslexia Minnesota handout, a teacher survey responses handout, and then written testimony from a gentleman who serves on the St. Cloud School Board. So we're pleased to have that kind of support material accompanying this bill. Welcome, Representative Runbeck. The chair moves House File 3013, and you have an amendment as well.
Madam Chair, yes, there is an amendment.
The chair moves the A18-0568 amendment. Members, is there discussion? Perhaps, Representative Runbeck, you should tell us specifically what you changed from your original file so we can actually discuss. Representative Runbeck. Okay.
There was concern about the number of hours that the original bill was requiring, and as a result, this is in the teacher renewal, license renewal program. So there was a reduction in those hours and then an elimination of a piece that, you know, really couldn't be handled in just 1 or 2 hours of training. So that's really what disappeared.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the A180568 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. And Representative Runbeck, will you reintroduce yourself for the record and present 3013 as amended?
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Linda Runbeck, and I'm happy today to present House File 3013. It's brought to us by a group called Decoding Dyslexia, and they are made up of a group of teachers, former teachers, educators, parents, clinicians, a lot of professionals who really have come to understand the depth of the issue of dyslexia in our schools and affecting really the reading ability of so many children. And it is estimated to be 15% to 20% of learners are suffering from some form of dyslexia. And it's amazing what these folks have learned, and the bottom line is that a one-size-fits-all approach to teaching reading is really not sufficient. It is just not really working for so many of the children. And one-size-fits-all, it's a bit hard to change the establishment who doesn't see it quite that way. And I think that's really some of the reality. But clearly this is not a, partisan issue whatsoever. And frankly, with the attention that has been given to reading in the first 3 years, it's really the right time to be analyzing, you know, how we are approaching the subject. And so simply this bill would incorporate into the teacher licensure renewals that there be a certain amount of time spent learning about what dyslexia is, how to recognize it, because that seems to be across the board what today's teachers are having with the problem. They don't see and understand and aren't aware of when kids are struggling, what they might be struggling with, and they don't know how then to suggest to parents what needs to be done. So it's a serious problem, and, you know, maybe we aren't going far enough with this bill, but thankfully it's going to, you know, bring it to the department to begin to put together some training sessions that all teachers will at least have that that modicum of awareness. So I'm going to turn it over the folks that have been so good about this and done such painstaking work are really to be commended. So Rachel Berger, if you would.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Representative Runbeck, and thank you to all those who are attending today who have worked so hard on this issue of helping our students who have dyslexia, because those students sometimes move into the adult world and have further complications. So we want to make sure we address this issue early in their school years. Welcome. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, I'm Rachel Berger, leader of Decoding Dyslexia Minnesota. Thank you for the support we've received from the past year, 5 years, from members of your committee on this bipartisan issue. We're here today to discuss the professional development needs of our educators. Whether identified or not, the National Institute of Child and Human Development states that 17 to 20% of our population struggles with dyslexia, as you heard from Representative Runbeck. According to our 2017 MCA data, 43.2% of Minnesota students are leaving third grade not reading at grade level. I don't mean to make the assumption that all of those students are dyslexic, but given the former data point, I think we can assume that a portion of these students are struggling with dyslexia. For the past number of years, you guys have heard stories from parents across the state who've had to take extreme measures to receive an equitable education for their students with dyslexia. That comes at a significant financial burden to families, and the biggest concern we have here at Decoding Dyslexia Minnesota is that that also creates an inequitable inequity among students. Only those with the resources will get the help they need. But students aren't the only ones that face inequity issues in education. The same inequity happens for our educators. They're not provided the tools they need to help students learn to read. Only those with the resources or the knowledge about dyslexia will access the tools they need. We conducted a statewide survey this past month and learned that within our teacher prep programs, of those with a bachelor's degree, 97% were not adequately prepared to teach a student with dyslexia how to read. 91% of teachers said they could not define dyslexia or its symptoms. When asking teachers with a master's or a doctorate, 92% they could not define dyslexia, its symptoms, or teach those students to read.
Excuse me, Ms. Berger, but members, this is in your packets.
Yes.
So if you want to follow along, just to reinforce what Ms. Berger is telling us, please pull out these handouts. Please continue.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. For all degree categories, 51% said dyslexia was never mentioned in their coursework. And of teachers surveyed, 69% of those received their educational-related master's or doctorate from a Minnesota college or university. 48% of our teachers surveyed said they've spent their own time and money on education to train themselves on to teach their dyslexic students. Again, so only a portion of them are going to have access to doing that. 17 to 20% of the population who struggles with dyslexia breaks down to approximately 4 to 5 students in every classroom. Yet when it comes to teacher prep or in-service development, there's a gap in the tools and resources provided to our educators. They're not provided any instruction on the disability that affects 1 in 5 students' ability to read printed word, and this leaves our educators feeling inadequately prepared, frustrated, and responsible. I got a phone call yesterday from a parent, a second grade student a parent who had a second grade student. This student was identified in kindergarten as a student who would struggle to learn. They provided the student with interventions, and for 2 years have been receiving interventions with an instructor. So we're three quarters of the way through second grade now, and this child has made zero gains in reading ability. After 2 years, still at kindergarten level, the parents report the child is currently anxious, upset, and losing confidence. The instructor is upset with the child's many mistakes and repeatedly asks the child to work harder. Today, yesterday when I received the phone call, which was, you know, obviously really upsetting to me, the instructor had informed the parents and the child that she would no longer provide the intervention services to the student because it's too frustrating to work with a student that makes so many mistakes. This is an instructor who clearly desires to help her student. This isn't an effort issue on the part of the student. This isn't a teacher blame issue. She was not provided the tools to help her student. This is dyslexia. And this is an issue of inequitable resource distribution for our teachers. I'll finish up here. 2016, we did a survey with in collaboration with Education Minnesota, and we learned that 75% of our educators, this is, again, in your packets, have not received an in-service training for educating students with dyslexia. And 96% said they have had experience working with students who are unresponsive to interventions. 94% would like to attend an in-service training in dyslexia. House File 3013 would help begin to provide our educators with the tools to understand what dyslexia looks like in the classroom, supports and accommodations to help, and resources available within the district and state. Madam Chair, members of the committee, on behalf of Minnesota students, I ask that you provide our educators with the tools and trainings to meet the literacy needs of the students our educators so clearly care about.
Thank you, Ms. Berger. And we have an additional testifier, perhaps a parent. We welcome you to the committee. Please say your name and then begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rachel Deppa, and I am the mother of five young children, two with dyslexia. I'm also a school board director at Delano Public Schools. Although I'm not here to speak on behalf of the district I represent, I am here to share with you some of that knowledge. As an elected official, I find that most of my time, much like yours, is spent around two issues, funding and equity. When preparing my remarks for today, I kept coming back to these two central themes. How can we relieve the funding issues that schools face, and how do we make education equitable for all of our students? The answer is, I believe, in our most valuable resource a school has to offer, its teachers. To illustrate my point, I want to share with you the stories of two different students in the same school system. The first is my son Isaiah. He spent all of kindergarten struggling to learn. Isaiah's teachers initially were not concerned, but as his year went on, her concern grew. Isaiah left kindergarten not able to spell his own name, not able to identify all the letters of the alphabet or their sounds, and he certainly wasn't reading. Isaiah had a great teacher, but neither his teacher nor us knew it was dyslexia until someone outside the school system suggested it. Isaiah's educational path will continue to be an uphill battle. My second story is about my daughter, Anna Marie, a kindergartner this year. Immediately, we started seeing the same things that she had were like her brother. At the start of kindergarten, she was tested by an outside doctor, and she too is dyslexic. By simply being able to identify her struggles, we were able to meet with her teacher and her reading interventionist and tell them the type of instruction that would be effective for her. Anna Marie will leave kindergarten behind, but she will be miles ahead of Isaiah, even though they both should have had access to the exact same educational resources. This is exactly the type of situation where I believe that House Bill 3013 takes a stride in the direction of relieving some of the funding issues as well as the equity issues in our public schools. Had Isaiah's teacher been given training in the identification of dyslexia, Isaiah would have been pulled for effective remediation as a kindergartner. I want to be clear, this is not about teacher bashing. You would be hard-pressed to find a better teacher than my son had. She had the patience, the dedication, and the desire. She was everything a parent hopes for when sending their kid to school. But she didn't have access to training to help her identify what was going on with my son. How many students go through ineffective interventions, wasting school resources like my son, simply because no one there knows how to find the signs of dyslexia? How many children with dyslexia are now in special education classes because they fell too far behind? I would argue that time and money spent in educating our teachers on the signs and traits of dyslexia will ultimately be a cost-saving endeavor. It would allow our teachers to identify dyslexia and help students early and effectively, in many cases before the need for special education arises. This leads to equity. In helping teachers learn how to identify and understand dyslexia, we are opening the door to equitable opportunities for our students. Every student has the right to learn to read. However, for dyslexic students, this is often a luxury only afforded to those who can pay for it and who can afford to have the testing done and the tutoring. Giving teachers the ability to identify dyslexia is a big step towards equitable outcomes for all children with dyslexia, not just those who can afford it. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Deppa. Members, questions for, will you stay there, please, both Rachels? Member questions before we ask if there are other testifiers? Representative Runbeck.
And Madam Chair, we do have three other testifiers, if you have time for them.
But before these two leave the table, Representative Mayquaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask a little bit about the kindergarten screenings that we do and if dyslexia screening could be part of that, and has that been pursued in the past?
Ms. Berger.
It has not been pursued in the past in the state of Minnesota, but it absolutely can. Dyslexia is identifiable with 92% accuracy by the age of five. We can do this. We have the tools and the resources, and I think it would be a wonderful idea. Sorry. It is identifiable. However, I would caution against doing anything that would seem as if it's a diagnosis. We want to screen for characteristics and streamline a child into an appropriate intervention based on characteristics. We don't want them to look as if they're being diagnosed and pigeonholed.
Any other questions? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for clarification, we're talking about preschool screening clinic, that they could actually identify children, and the preschool screening that we do? Or are we talking about kindergarten screening?
Ms. Berger.
I believe Representative Quaddy was asking about kindergarten.
Representative Mayquaid, you were asking about the kindergarten screening, correct? Yes. So proceed, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you had said by the age of five, would there be characteristics that we could be screening for in that preschool screening clinic that most children go to? And as you said, it's just a screening. It's not a diagnosis.
Ms. Berger.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Yes, there are characteristics identifiable in preschool.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So perhaps we should, is there a vehicle for adding that to the preschool screening?
Members, I think, you know, as this bill moves on, that we'll have, you know, some other iterations that come forward.
Mm-hmm.
It is being re-referred to government operations for some unusual reason, but that's been a request, and so it'll go there, and then it'll return to either, well, it's always in play here,
right,
but it'll then go on to finance, okay, education finance. So,
thank you. One other further question.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my concern is that we also, we're providing 2 hours of training. My question is, who's doing the training? And if we're going to add the preschool screening and to be sure that dyslexia is part of that program, then we'll have to train people to do that screening. So that needs to be added to the screening process.
And Representative Ward, the screening issue is kind of a new idea, and so I think maybe that would be handled in a separate piece of legislation if people are interested.
Yeah. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, my apology for being late. I was actually having a conversation about this bill and this issue in my office, so that's not normally my practice to be late to committee, so I missed some of your introduction. But I wanted to lend my support to your bill and also be a resource for the rest of the committee. My son is dyslexic, and I live this journey. It is not about, as you said, bashing teachers or a school system. There are many teachers, as you said, so I really appreciate that comment. I want to be clear on that. But the resources aren't there, and the training isn't there. And we've all heard the statistics of the percentage of folks that are incarcerated that can't read. So this leads to many, many issues long-term for kids. I just want to give you a brief snapshot of what this is like. Remember when you were in kindergarten and we were all learning to write our letters and you have those pieces of paper with the dashed lines and you make the lowercase a and the uppercase a and so forth? A snapshot for my son. So when the teacher corrects that and you're writing it, they use the red pen and they correct. In various different interventions that we've tried with my son, we were trying to explain a letter being one-dimensional on a piece of paper. And we said, how do you see it? And he looked at us like we were crazy, and he said, I see six. Mm-hmm. And we said, six. I see front, back, up, down, side, and it moves in my brain. He sees in movies. The letters were moving. How do you learn to read, much less how do you learn to write, when the letters are moving? We ended up trying to teach him letters by working with clay and having him build a letter out of clay and then identify that's an A, and could he imprint that in his brain so he could at least see the A. Just that arduous step to start to learn, to even read and make a sound and connect an A to another letter. He's 20 years old. It took us tens of thousands of dollars. And to your point, I quit a job. To take him to tutoring, to get assessments. It is an equity issue. He's 20, and he'll be building robots because he can see how things are put together. His intellect was spatial reasoning off the charts, but we were told at one point we'd be lucky if he could be a janitor. This is real, and we need this support.
Thank you, Representative Bailey. Yes, and there are some wonderful tools out there today. I know that Ms. Berger would attest to that, and probably Ms. Deppa too, that are available to help our children as long as we can find out whether or not that is what is causing them to struggle. Because I've had demonstrations seeing the clay, but also some computerized programs that have worked so well. Representative Bennett. There's a teacher speaking now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I taught for 33 years and loved it. And dyslexia is very real. And I want to thank Representative Runbeck and the rest of you for bringing this forward. I've been looking forward to hearing this bill because I wanted to learn more about it and exactly what it did. And after I'm hearing about this, I fully support it. I think it's excellent. My question is, do you have any data that would show you kind of compare students who have been identified early with dyslexia, for example, like your daughter in kindergarten, and the progress that they have made in reading versus those that don't, and or any data that would show the reduction in special ed services? Because I think it's huge to catch kids early, and I'm not saying if you don't have that data, that is okay, but I found as a teacher it was very frustrating that when students struggle, we had to wait so long. I taught first grade, so I'm in the earlier years. We had to wait so long and have such a gap in between their performance and their IQ and that kind of thing that by the time they actually got help, it was too late, and they're struggling for the rest of their educational career and then into adulthood. So just curious if you have either anecdotal or hard data on, you know, identifying early and what that does for a child.
Ms. Deppa.
Madam Chair, at the school that I'm at and where my son is at, Isaiah started out in kindergarten. He was not identified for any pull-ups whatsoever, which kind of amazed his teacher and myself. Isaiah fell so far behind that by December of his first grade year, they wanted to move him into special education. Sure. We had just gotten the diagnosis, and we said, well, that's not an appropriate place for my son. We fought that, and then he just wasn't succeeding in the pull-ups that they had. He was doing basic skills, Title I, and I at one point told his principal that I will come here every day until you move him in with the teacher who has the training to teach him. And about 2 months later, he gave in. And Isaiah's progress from that point forward, by second grade, he was reading at grade level. So we're talking 7 months. Anna Marie is behind. We're actually having the same discussion right now. They'd like to move her to special ed. I see that as a waste of special ed funding. We know that there's a special ed funding gap that I'm sure all of you have heard about from school boards everywhere. And so I see that as a waste of resources. If I can put my daughter in a class where she's going to be remediated appropriately and we're taking 40 minutes a day of the teacher's time instead of pulling her for math, reading, and then the remediations on top of that, we're saving schools money. We're seeing it. Isaiah, when he started, we were told he was the only dyslexic in our school, that there was no others. It was amazing. Yeah, we've got great water there. Isaiah's teacher came to me, and she said, you volunteered in the room. Pick three more you think are like him. So we put four kids together. Within a month, they had seven, and within 2 months, we had 14 kids in that class, all seeing extreme successes. These kids are all reading now. Mm-hmm. And so it's not hard data. I'm sure we could get it for you. But to see that success in the school, we actually have a teacher now who teaches the dyslexic kids from second grade to fourth grade. Once they have a diagnosis, or a lot of times the teacher will come and say, hey, can you hang out with them for a little bit? Just give me an idea. And maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Sometimes they're not. They're just not. But sometimes we'll make that call to the parents and say, maybe you should do some testing. And then when they get into these remediations and these kids see success, we see kids who are happier. We're losing the behavior problems. Mm-hmm. I always tell parents that your kid has to be someone in that classroom. So they're either going to be the funny kid, the silly kid, the troublemaker. My son always said he didn't want to be the dumb kid. Mm-hmm. And so he would cry a lot when he'd get frustrated just to get out of the classroom. So it's those successes in the classroom that I think we'll see with this bill, if we can identify them and get them the help so that they can be successful in front of their peers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One more quick question, and when you talked about having that child identified, does dyslexia have to be identified by a medical doctor? I was thinking when I was going through school that was the case, when I was a teacher, sorry. And that seems to be a hurdle for schools to have to go through that and the expense or so on. So if that's true, how can we kind of help schools with that hurdle?
Madam Chair, in our school, we have very few that have a medical diagnosis. But we do have the identification ability. We look at phonetic awareness mm-hmm. and things like that, comprehension. And those are the kids that we're identifying without a diagnosis, but saying these are the children that need this type of remediation based on what we know about dyslexia. So they don't have the medical diagnosis, but they are getting pulled for those interventions, and they're being effective.
Let's call forward the Representative Pryor. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I questions much along the same lines that Representative Bennett was just asking. And I'm thinking possibly this is the idea of either expanding or additional legislation to complement this, but that the data collection of an early intervention, possibly as early as a preschool screening, and then following those kids looking at the overall success of the program is something that we should be really cognizant of going forward. And then also get a comment on that. And then also to talk about this is where my memory might be falling short, but that writing into statute now the definition of dyslexia that does not have to be a medical diagnosis, that's been a change that we've come up with. And so if your experts talk about that the diagnosis of dyslexia and then also the comprehensive look of understanding dyslexia and getting the right intervention for it and the data collection on that as we want every child to succeed.
Well, members, we do have a specialist at the department now in dyslexia. That's a victory that it was accomplished, and I'm not sure that person is in the audience. There she is, yes. I think she'll be addressing us, yes, either in this bill or when we get to the summary report. But let's hear from our next testifier, and then eventually we're going to hear from our specialist so we can meet her. And she's tuning in very carefully today, I can tell. Welcome and say your name for the committee.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. My name is Michelle Quickstead. I want to thank you for allowing me to share my story with you. I'm an early childhood special education teacher. I've been teaching for over 20 years. I have a background in communication disorders, which is the degree you get before you become a speech-language pathologist. I've been working with children birth to ages 8 for the last 20 years. And in my college courses, I received extensive training in identifying children who have a delay in development, but very little preparation for how to help children learn how to read, let alone what to do when children struggle learning to read. At one point in my career, I was a special education teacher in a kindergarten classroom. I had students that did not respond to the curriculum or with the one-on-one time that I gave them. This is when I heard about Orton-Gillingham, an instructional approach intended primarily for use with individuals who have difficulty with reading, spelling, and writing of the sort associated with dyslexia. The school district did not provide approved funds for me to have professional development, but I felt strongly about learning strategies to help these students that weren't learning from the standard practices. I used my own resources for professional development, and grateful I did. A few years later, my first child was born, and by the time he was in kindergarten, I was able to focus on this language-based learning disability to seek an outside diagnosis. It is because of the training I sought and the awareness I had that my son was diagnosed with dyslexia at the age of 6 and is currently in 4th grade and reading at a 5th grade level. I am currently seeking my second master's degree in leadership to receive my director's degree for special education, and I'm a contract consultant throughout the metro. I've used these opportunities to share what I've learned about dyslexia and to raise awareness and offer resources to other teachers like me. Not one teacher has turned down my resources, and they come back for more. Teachers want to know how to help their students, and they are relying on us to share the research and best practices to meet the needs of all learners. Now that I'm aware of the lack of teacher preparation and continuing education for the nearly 20% of our learners, I'm passionate about telling my story. Please pass HF 3013 and give teachers the guidance they need to do their jobs. Students only learn as good as what is taught to them. We have a chance to change a whole new generation of readers. Let's start today.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzed. Are there other testifiers? Yes, please come forward. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Kelly Fisher, and I am currently the reading specialist at Excelsior Elementary in the Minnetonka School District. I started my education professional journey at Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter, Minnesota, and later earned my Master's of Arts in Education at Hamline University. Throughout my years as an undergraduate, I was well supported in learning many things about education and was very prepared to start teaching in the classroom in general. When it came to preparing to teach literacy, however, my courses centered only around teaching basic comprehension strategies like inferring, making connections, etc. There was absolutely nothing about phonics, multisensory strategies, nor even the mention of dyslexia. After I graduated from Gustavus in 2005, I got my first position as a first grade teacher at my current school, where I taught first grade for the first 10 years of my career. In college, I had always envisioned teaching an intermediate grade. When the phone call came about being hired for my first job, my principal said on the other end of the line, "We are so excited to have you teaching first grade here next year." As soon as I hung up the phone, my very first thought was, "I don't know how to teach them how to read. What if they leave my classroom and they can't read?" After teaching first grade for a little while, I quickly realized that teaching kids how to read was my absolute passion. But while I felt successful for those students who were typical learners, I knew that I didn't have enough knowledge on how to help those students who were struggling to learn how to read the printed text. A big life-changing moment came when the parent of a former student came back to me the following year and told me their daughter had been diagnosed with dyslexia. I thought, how could I have missed this? How did I not see it? That was just the beginning of me realizing that I didn't know how much I didn't know. I decided that I needed to pursue learning how to read, or how to teach students with dyslexia, but even as a teacher who was striving to learn more, the path was difficult. I applied for staff development funds to go to Orton-Gillingham training. I was only partially funded and paid the rest of the fee out of my own pocket. I then had to take all of my personal days and an unpaid day to attend the training. For every minute of the training, my jaw was dropped open, thinking, what? So that's why the words in English say that? Do that? Over and over, I kept thinking, why doesn't every teacher who ever teaches students to read get taught this? Upon my return to the classroom, I did my best to integrate it into my classroom teaching for my students, because every student benefits from this instruction, even if it is only critical for a smaller but significant number of students. I used it to complement our district adopted curriculum. A few years ago, I had the opportunity to do what I love all day, every day, as our school's reading specialist. As I started this new role, I knew we needed to make some changes to the options for instruction for students in intervention. Doing more of the same strategies that were not working in the classroom was not good enough. Along with the help of some amazing parent advocates and district support, we were able to bring on board different levels of the Wilson Reading Program, which stems from the basis of Orton-Gillingham instruction. Unlike my original Orton-Gillingham endeavor, I was finally able to receive district-supported training and got my Wilson Level 1 certification. But I know that is an anomaly compared to most Minnesota districts at present. I truly believe that students should have access at public schools to teachers who have had training to know what dyslexia is, understand how dyslexic students learn best, how to see early signs of it and get them connected to the type of instruction at school that best fits their needs as early as possible. It shouldn't be only students who have families with the ability to pay thousands of dollars for tutoring who can get access to learning that meets their needs. In an increasingly literacy-demanding society, literacy is a major gatekeeper to a good quality of life. I am so honored to be here to speak with you today because I share just one story. I represent so many other teachers like me who have voiced how much they want more training. So many teachers want to learn more about how they can give these amazing students the very best that Minnesota education has to offer, the education that they deserve. Teacher training would be a great step in making that happen. Thank you,
Ms. Fisher. And thanks for your work for all those in the audience who are either volunteers or teachers of our children. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I share a representation with Minnetonka School District, and I know that there are parents that are so attached to that school because of the reading program and parents of dyslexic children, and they even when they move away, they keep coming back because they know they're not going to get better education than there. So thank you so much for your work.
Absolutely. Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to say hello again.
Hi.
We met in October. I was a little fuzzy coming in this morning, so I didn't remember what we were talking about. I apologize, but we met in October after the bill was passed. And Minnetonka has, is it 60 teachers with 90 volunteer hours? Is that the numbers I'm remembering right for dyslexia training?
Ms. Fisher?
We have, I think, around that many teachers who have gone through certain levels of the different Wilson reading training.
It's amazing. We sat down and talked for, I don't know, hour, an hour and a half maybe. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that impressed me the most was, I think I asked, once you discover that the child has dyslexia, how long does it take to get him back on track, to get him up to reading level? And I can't remember which one gave the answer, but she thought for a while. She said, about 2 months. Mm-hmm. I thought, what a turnaround. What a opportunity to catch these kids in the early stages and getting back on track, getting back, you know, with the rest of the students. And I just applaud your efforts to do that. And it's really paying off, I think. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
And I think then we have a former president of MSBA who would like to say a few words, Mr. Donovan. Thank you, Ms. Fisher. Welcome to our committee. Please say your name and begin.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, my name is Kevin Donovan, and I'm here to share my personal story with a learning difference. I am currently on the Monomedi School Board. I have served for the last 12 years. As you mentioned, I'm past president of MSBA, the Minnesota School Boards Association, and currently the chair of the Minnesota School Boards Association Insurance Trust. I have served on numerous nonprofit boards and have been very successful in my career. Thank you for listening to my journey. This is the first time that I have broadcast to the world that I have a learning difference. Okay. And it puts me in a little bit of a vulnerable position, but I think it needs to be told because we're hearing all this today from others. And at 59, I have been on this journey for a while. I have known ever since I was a little boy that I've had a great deal of difficulty spelling words. In fact, my spelling ability is so bad that even a dictionary at times proves useless. I have vivid memories of Mrs. Pultusker, my seventh grade teacher at St. Paul Ramsey Junior High, telling me to go to the chalkboard and spell necessary. This I could not do.
No.
And I was shamed to the point that I turned away from writing because I thought I was not smart enough to do it. I don't think my experiences 50 years ago was that unique. Teachers just didn't know. I support this bill. The vast majority of teachers do not understand learning difference dyslexia, but I believe, after hearing testimony and seeing the results of the survey, that they do. My wife, a 31-year teacher with St. Paul Schools, I talked to her, and she said, I can tell, but I don't know what to do necessarily with that knowledge that someone is struggling. Let's give teachers the tools to help all our students learn. I am the current development director for the Montemita Area Education Foundation, as well as school board, and it's two separate organizations, so we're good there. My serendipitous connection to dyslexia came 2 years ago as our school foundation funded a grant to allow our elementary reading specialist, Judy Livingston, to attend a national conference on dyslexia and learning difference. Judy came back from the event eager and excited to apply what she had learned to her students. We have our grant recipients then report to the school board of what they have done. This is where I first discovered that I might have dyslexia. You see, Judy shared that dyslexics have above average intelligence. That was kind of fun to know.
Yes.
This learning difference has a genetic component. It runs in families. At 58, sitting in my school board chair, I discovered that my spelling difficulties had a name. For full disclosure, my mother was the 1946 Ohio State spelling champion. You think I could have gotten some of that DNA? I was very fortunate that I had a very strong, supportive family and a great college teacher that put inner voice before syntax and spelling. There are now some really great workarounds, such as my little helper, Siri, spell necessary. Through my connection with Rachel Berger and the work of Judy Livingston, I have learned about my dyslexia and the research that has been done on identification, remediation, and supports. There is so much we can do for our educators and students if we come together on the topic of literacy for all. House File 3013 will support and provide guidance to teachers that are eager to receive training on learning difference dyslexia. From my MSBA role, I am, as a rule, leery of unfunded mandates. However, this bill provides such a direct impact to student learning, that I strongly encourage inclusion in the Education Omnibus Bill. We can develop a train-the-trainer model that can be done for all 332 districts in our state. Partnerships with higher ed institutions could allow us to do this relicensure for a minimal cost during teacher in-service days. My hope is for all our 847,000 students to have trained teachers who know how to identify and provide the necessary support for the 20% of our students that have learning differences. My hope for the future is that no one will have to wait 58 years listening to a report in a school board chair to discover that they have a learning difference. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Donovan, very much. Now I'd like to call our new specialist at MDE to the table to introduce herself and to describe her responsibilities. I was so glad to learn that you were on board now and we could have this this great outlet from the department. Welcome, Mr. Cordy. I think you want to lead off, so I'll let you do that, and then we'll hear from Ms. Schulting.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for allowing me to testify on this bill, and thank you for providing the funding last year to bring Dr. Schulting on board. It has been it was a long process to get through hiring, but we were extremely lucky to find a candidate like her, and I'll let her talk about what some of her credentials are. I'd also like to thank Decoding Dyslexia and Representative Runbeck for working on this amendment that addressed some of the concerns that we had, as well as concerns some of the other stakeholders had. So we think we're in a good spot here. But without further ado, I'll turn it over to Dr. Schulting, but would be happy to answer any questions you have after her testimony.
Welcome to our committee, and welcome to helping our students across the state. Please say your name for the record.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Dr. Amy Schulting. I'm honored to speak with you today about dyslexia. I'll give you a brief overview of my background. I'm a former classroom teacher with a master's degree in education and a PhD in clinical psychology. I'm a child psychologist with prior experience diagnosing dyslexia and tutoring students with dyslexia. I also have experience as a researcher at Duke University conducting education policy research. And last but not least, I am also the proud mother of three boys with dyslexia who have taught me a tremendous amount. Today, I'm honored to be here today in my role as a dyslexia specialist at MDE, thanks to the legislation that was passed last year to create this position. So I thank you. As a dyslexia specialist at MDE, my role is to provide technical assistance and support to schools and districts and teachers to increase professional awareness of dyslexia and instructional competence so that teachers can recognize these characteristics and provide effective instruction to struggling readers. As has been mentioned, we know from longitudinal research from Sally Shaywitz at Yale University that approximately 17% of students are dyslexic. It's also estimated that approximately 80% of students with a learning disability in special education are demonstrating reading difficulties. So this is an important and timely issue for your consideration. There's significant research to support the importance of early identification and intervention for students with dyslexia. So this is going back to some questions that were asked earlier in this hearing. Characteristics of dyslexia can be identified as early as preschool, which allows intervention to begin without delay in an ideal case. Very recent research published just 4 months ago indicates that children who received intervention earlier in first and second grade made twice as much reading progress as students who received the same intervention in third grade. It's also important to note that the first graders continue to improve their reading skills at faster rates for the 3 years of follow-up after the intervention. Another striking finding is that we know that 90% of struggling readers who receive intervention by first grade can achieve grade level reading. However, if intervention is delayed until third grade, it's estimated that 75% of these kids will continue to struggle throughout their academic careers. So that's quite a stark difference, 90% success versus 75% of continued difficulty. So these findings provide evidence on the importance of early, intensive, evidence-based intervention for reading problems in the early grades. We also know that high-quality, evidence-based reading instruction benefits all students, not just students with dyslexia. So the components of effective reading instruction have been described by the International Dyslexia Association as well as the Center for Effective Reading Instruction. And training modules are available online to provide this information to teachers and schools. In addition, our current reading standards in Minnesota include these same components of instruction necessary for students both with and without dyslexia in order for them to become successful readers. The difference is that students with dyslexia require a higher dose, if you will, and more explicit instruction than a student without dyslexia in order for them to create the neural networks between the vision part of the brain and the language centers of the brain. We are not born with a reading center in our brain. We're actually born with centers for language, and it's up to instruction to create those neural networks. Kids with dyslexia require a higher dose and more explicit instruction to create those neural networks for reading. Now, through other legislation, now that schools are screening students for dyslexia, struggling readers can be identified earlier so that they can be matched very quickly with an appropriate level of instruction and intervention as soon as possible. In my current role as a dyslexia specialist, I am happy to support teachers and schools in these efforts. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Schulting, very much. Are there questions for our specialist or for Mr. Cordy? Very good. Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who wanted to testify? Just very briefly, we've spent considerable time on this bill. Closing comments, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thanks for all this time. Every time I hear the testimony, and it's, you know, expanded as the years have gone, it's amazing. It's amazing. But I'm just going to share one little anecdote. When I first was elected to office, and that's 1989, I met with a teacher, first grade teacher from Spring Lake Park, and she was about to retire. She's about 60. And she told me, she said, not one child left her first grade class who didn't know how to read. It's like, what have we lost? What have we forgotten? Are we not trying hard enough? And it seems like a lot of the discovery here of where the problem is some of this. So thanks so much. Appreciate your help.
Thank you very much. And with that, the chair renews her motion that House File 3013 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. And members, that's because there's rulemaking in the bill. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the Committee on Government Operations. Thank you very much, Representative Runbeck, and to all of you who took the time to come today. And Dr. Schulting, I know we'll have more conversations. With that, we'll move on to Representative Christensen's 2846. Welcome to the testifying table, Representative Christensen. And if you would move your bill, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Madam Chair, I move House File 2846 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
And Representative Christensen, you also have an amendment. And members, would you pull out the A3 amendment, please? Because I need to ask your indulgence in perhaps making some technical changes. Representative Mariani, you will have to speak to this. The A3 amendment, we were running out of time yesterday as concerns came to us about adding parties to this this proposal. But we also had a typo, a technical error in line 1.5, the 12th addition to this working group, the Minnesota Alliance with Youth is how it should read. So in a moment, Representative Mariani, I will ask your indulgence. And then, members, we were asked to add a 15th and 16th parties to this proposal as well. Number 15 would be the Association of School Administrators, and number 16 would be the Association of School Business Officials. Now, we could wait with this if you object. I think my members are on board. But Representative Mariani, do you have any problems with our adding these as long as we're in committee doing our business?
Madam Chair, just so I'm thank you, Madam Chair, for the transparency. I'm just wondering quickly, just so I can catch up here. So the amendment presently before us is the main difference has to do with this technical change, or is it the entire amendment itself, even without the technical change made, was that not available in the prescribed time?
Thank you, Representative Mariani, for the question. The amendment before us without any changes was on time. It was that concerns came to us. Is that not correct, Ms. Peterson? Yes. So the corrections have come in after the 254 posting of this.
And Madam Chair, the corrections then are the line 1.5, the correct name of the MYA group, and then there was another part, is that right?
Yes, we'd be adding two other parties to the working group, as you would see listed on page 2 of the bill. Members and requests came to us to add two other groups. So in addition to those that are in the amendment as it was posted, we would have an additional 15th and 16th membership, the Association of School Administrators and the Association of School Business Officials.
Madam Chair, certainly small technical changes, I think we've always had a custom and usage of giving ourselves some room with that. Obviously, adding new language could become an issue, but I think in the spirit of of, you know, non-controversial language here. I would say that we're certainly okay with this. Obviously, you know, the behind the scenes, you know, constantly making us aware is the preferred way to deal with this, right? So, you know, just the reaching out to my office, et cetera. But at this point, I don't see any objection, Madam Chair. I think it's a good amendment.
So thank you, Representative Mariani. Members, we will incorporate these technical changes. We will call all of them technical changes. So with that, Representative Christensen moves the H2846A3 with technical changes. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. And now your bill is in the order it should be. 2846 as amended. Please present your bill, Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. House File 2846 establishes a special education working group to gather stakeholders. There's a whole list of stakeholders in the bill, and as we just discussed, we added some stakeholders with the A3 amendment. You know, I think it's important that we bring all of these groups together. They all have very important perspectives on the issue that I think we're all aware of with special education and trying to control the costs and make sure that we're providing a great education for all students in Minnesota and for our special education students in Minnesota. And I think it's important that these stakeholders gather together and talk about what we can do to make special education more efficient and most importantly, more effective in Minnesota. A key part of this bill is it encourages the legislature to convene a legislative study group after this working group concludes its work, which I think is an important part of this bill, that's noted in there, because a lot of times I think we've seen these working groups come out with recommendations, then they kind of they're well received or they're received, and then they don't necessarily move forward through the process. So I think putting that in the bill, that legislative study group is recommended, is a good thing. And I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. Are there questions for him? I will respond before we have our testifiers. Representative Bly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering in the list of, and I know it's a long list and maybe you wouldn't want to add more, but if you would consider the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs as an organization that you might want to think about including. They represent some charter schools but also the alternative programs and area learning centers. And, you know, we find that a number of students who struggle in school end up in these programs, and I think would be useful to have their input on this discussion.
Representative Bly, that's a good addition and a good question. And I think when we deal with the omnibus bill, because this is, you know, this is going to be in my possession, even though it's going to government operations, if we include it in the omnibus bill, we will certainly add, through amendments, other groups if they desire. So thank you for that suggestion, because you're right. Alternative students often do get referred to special education. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I also would support that. I will be continuing this bill discussion. I would also encourage us to very strongly think about being explicit with cities of the first class. Between my city, school district of Minneapolis, we're probably right around 100 million of that 600 million plus. Cross subsidy, you throw in Rochester and Duluth, and you've got a really substantive number of students that fall in this category as well as cross subsidy issues. So look forward to revisiting this with you as we move into the omnibus bill discussion. Hopefully you have an open mind on that as well.
Thank you. With that, are there any other questions, Representative Makewade?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Christensen, I really like your bill. The only thing that I was going to ask is if it's possible that a student who's in special education could be part of this as well.
Representative Christensen.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Makewade, I think that's a great idea. I think it's I know we have some students as part of this group. I think the challenge with that is just making sure we have a logistical method, basically, of ensuring there's a special education student on the on the working group. So I'd be happy to work with you and talk about this as, you know, going to government operations, and we'll likely be laid over for the omnibus bill. So there's definitely opportunities to figure out how to work that language.
Then I'd like to call forth Denise Dietrich from MSBA, Scott Kronquist, Gary Amoroso, Valerie Josland, if you folks have something you'd like to offer here. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. On behalf of school boards across the state, I want to thank Representative Christensen for authoring this very important bill. The special education cross-subsidy has become one of the highest priorities for school board members across the state. And you can see that by taking a look at our legislative agenda that we gave you before the hearing started. But since this is a policy committee, I am going to resist the temptation to go to great lengths to demonstrate that there is a fiscal cross-subsidy issue in the state of Minnesota. But please allow me just to give you one statistic before I proceed. First of all, it's just to demonstrate a little bit of the challenge that school boards are experiencing in balancing their budgets. The actual cross-subsidy for 2016 is $679 million. And if you look at last year in the last legislative session, we increased the per-pupil formula by $371 million. And so you compare those two numbers and you get a real good picture of what school board members across the state are struggling with in trying to balance their budgets. So with that, though, this persistent cross-subsidy requires local school districts, as a result, to make budget cuts, pass local operating referenda, or both. This problem is not new to the legislature. We have previously engaged in audit reports, work groups, and one-year temporary funding solutions on this issue. So I just want to also make the caveat statement here is that we are not intending to pit special education students against general education students, but we are hoping that this bill will address some of the fiscal realities that our school districts are dealing with. So what I would like to do is just give you a little bit of context as to what has been going on, what we call a grassroots movement for our school board members across the state. And so I would like to begin with that. This past year, we traveled the state. School board members, like never before, have expressed their hopelessness and frustration in the rising costs of special education costs, which results, as I mentioned, in budget shortfalls and is consuming more and more of the general education budget. School boards are united like we have never seen before. In fact, they wanted us to bring to the legislature a very strong statewide message, is that we need a plan to figure out how to reduce or eliminate the special education cross-subsidy. So since that time, school board members across the state come together at our delegate assembly, and in 2017 they passed a resolution calling for a work group. And since then, in the months of January and February, over 170 school board members have put it on their agenda and passed special education cross-subsidy resolutions at their board table. They have called on the federal government to fully fund their promised 40% of special education, and they have called on the state to form some sort of a work group to create some recommendations. And in case you're a visual learner, I think this is really appropriate since the earlier discussion on dyslexia, depending on your learning style, we have provided a map that looks like this. The green area represents every school board that has passed two special education resolutions. And you can check to see if your school district is on there, and if they're not, encourage them to get it on their agenda and to pass one. So the other thing, the great thing about this is that as the result of them passing these resolutions, the media in the local communities have really picked up on these messages. And I just want to read a couple of them, some of our board members who were then quoted in their local papers, what they have said. One school board member says, "We don't want to pit people against each other for funds." He says, "With the budget we have, it's very difficult to work with the per pupil funds from the state when it's all eaten up by paying for special education, when government isn't subsidizing it like it was promised." Another school board member says, "The state and federal mandates what you have to do, but they don't back it up with funding." Another school board member said, and really specific to their school district, "That's $7 million that we have to make up for because Congress and the state legislature do not fund the special education requirements that they originally promised to do so." And these comments go on and on. But what are we looking for in the end result or the roadmap here? We are asking that the legislature form a work group, that they would meet over the interim and come to agreement on 5 to 10 actionable recommendations to reduce the special education cross-subsidy costs, and that can be done by finding efficiencies and effectiveness. It's a multifaceted issue. And then to develop a 5-year plan to eliminate the special education cross-subsidy. We ask that these recommendations would then be taken very seriously in the 2018 legislative session. We want to add that school board members have acknowledged and noticed that this working group model has been an effective model in the past. They cite the long-term facility maintenance program evolved out of a working group and the 4-tiered teacher licensure system also evolved out of a work group. So they have very high hopes for forming another work group and actually getting some results. So with that, I will conclude my comments, and I thank you, members of the committee and Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. I think you mean the 2019 session.
Oh, did I say 18?
Yeah, you said 18. Yes, I don't think we'll get to it unless we have a special session in December or something. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Welcome, Mr. Kroonquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. I want to start off by also thanking Representative Christensen for bringing this very important bill forward, and we strongly support it. As Ms. Dietrich noted, when you talk to your local school board members or administrators, I'm guessing that if it's not the first thing you hear from them, it's certainly one of the first things you hear from them is they need your help in addressing the special education cross-subsidy. And let me just say up front, too, and Ms. Dietrich also references, but we strongly support our special education services. We have been a national leader in Minnesota. They're critical to making sure that all of our students and our students with special needs have the ability to reach their full potential. So in no way are we supporting reducing services that students need, but we do need to address the cross-subsidy. A little also financial perspective, a little different angle than Ms. Dietrich cited. Last year, you fought hard in the funding year for a 2% and 2% formula increase, and it was greatly appreciated. What that provided your school districts was $121 per pupil for the current school year, and then it would be a $124 increase next year. The districts I represent, their current per pupil cross subsidy is $964 per pupil. So sometimes people wonder, well, gee, why the legislature just passed 2 and 2 on the formula? Why is my school district still facing a budget shortfall? Why are they cutting? Well, I think that's your answer right there. I would suggest that we can no longer wait for action by the federal government. That doesn't seem to be a winning strategy. So I think we just need to take the bull by the horn, so to speak, at the state level and create a working group to come up with a plan and to move forward with addressing this as best we can. So, again, thank you, Madam Chair, members, and thank you, Representative Christensen. We really appreciate this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Kroonquist. Welcome, Mr. Amoroso. Please say your name and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gary Amoroso, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Everything we've heard, we would say did it to. We do want to thank for President Christensen. The thing that I want to stress is that we all focus on the cross subsidy, but from my perspective, the cross subsidy is the outcome of the inputs into the system. And I appreciate the fact that as you look at the bill, it talks about what are the type of things the working group needs to focus on. And it's not just focusing on the financial aspect of special education, but it's focusing on how do we service our children, what are the trends, how can we best meet the needs of our children. And as Mr. Grunquist just said, all of our children, whether it's a special ed child, a regular ed child, doesn't matter where they're from, what color they are, or what size they are, we're here to service every child, to help every child meet his or her potential. And so we're excited that the bill calls for the working group not just to focus on finance, but to look at how do we service these children, what have we learned over time, and how do we best implement policies, how do we best implement strategies, how do we develop skills so that we can best meet the needs of the students. And I believe as we go through that journey, that will help to lead us to a point where we can reduce that cross-subsidy. So, Madam Chair, thank you for allowing this testimony. Again, Representative Christensen, thank you for bringing the bill forward, and we look forward to working in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Dozlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Valerie Dozlin. I represent the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. MASBO is are the school finance directors and payroll staff, et cetera. I'd like to thank Representative Christensen, Madam Chair, and the members of the committee for their indulgence in the late edition of MASBO as one of the stakeholders. We do appreciate it, so thank you. You know, you hear a lot about the cost subsidy, but one of the issues that MASBO is very interested in, as a matter of fact, they have are having a small working group meeting for their organization right now as we speak, or very shortly, about item number 6, line 1.20, mm-hmm. analyzing the effect of the 2013 changes to the funding formula. Mm-hmm. The cost subsidy is very important. All of you hear about that regularly, but I believe many of you will start to hear about those statutory changes as well, because school districts are now starting to see what the impact is in their special ed funding reimbursement starting this year. So we support the task force, look forward to being part of it, and glad that it's a broader topic, and there are other issues besides the cross-subsidy, although that is a very important one. You will start hearing about that formula change shortly. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Dozlin, and thank you to all who gave us input as we drafted this proposal, because many of you brought ideas to me that I referred to Ms. Pera, and, of course, she helped us put together this proposal. So thank you. Welcome. Please say your name for the record to begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members, Jody Boer with Education Minnesota, and I will be brief, just echo everything that you've already heard about all the issues facing us around special education. I've had discussions with you already, Madam Chair, this legislative session, and I'm just happy that this bill is brought forward, which I think gives us an opportunity to talk about all the things, including the financial pieces, but the other issues we're facing, that our educators are facing, and our children with special needs are facing. So we support the task force. We are also happy to be part of it. We think all of these voices together, hopefully we can make some progress. I just want to thank Representative Christensen for his past work on special education issues, and want to give just a little bit of a shout out because he is going to chief author a bill for us this year asking for funding for paraprofessionals who work with special needs children. And so I know this isn't a finance committee, Madam Chair, but that's a piece of this. It's a piece of what we're trying to do to help all our children with special needs. So, again, I just want to thank him and thank you, and I look forward on behalf of Education Minnesota and special education educators to be a voice at this table. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Burr. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to comment on this proposal? Ms. Averholden? Mr. Heller, are you going to make a comment on this or not? Well, then please come forward. Our time is running short here. If you're going to comment on this proposal, I don't know if that's what you intend, but I see you up there and think that you're giving me a sign.
I was just wondering about the bills.
Well, if you're not going to speak, then you can return to your seat. But if you're going to testify, please sit down. Thank you. Ms. Aberholden, welcome to our committee. Say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members, Sue Aberholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota National Alliance on Mental Illness. And I do want to express support for this bill. We've, of course, participated in many of these kinds of task forces, but what I like is it's going beyond it. I'd actually even prefer that you just got rid of number two, since we've been analyzing the regulations almost as long as I've been alive. So we could move on from there. But I really think, especially number four, I think there are strategies that we can use. What's been the impact of PBIS, the impact of schooling to mental health, social-emotional learning. I think those are things that do deter kids from special education, and it would be great to actually have a more in-depth discussion on this. Thank you.
And thank you always for the work that you provide for us through NAMI. We really appreciate that, knowing how important mental health issues are to our children in our schools. Mr. Heller, please say your name for the record and begin. Did you have a handout?
Yeah, yes, Chair, as I indicated earlier this morning, there's
I don't think
the yellow sheets for the chair and a single sheet for all the members.
Well, the page will receive those, so.
I know. I didn't see the page, so I
Matthias, would you come down?
I will tell the audience where this document's found, at least one of them.
Mr. Heller, would you say your name for the record, please, and begin?
My name is Rick Heller, unofficially represent the Twice Exceptional, Minnesota Statute 120B15, and the people with print disabilities found in the Higher Education Act of 2008 next to the blind. Those are the only two identified in the Higher Education Act between the acts. I'd like to testify on Bill 2846. For the public audience, I would like to let them know about the handouts, which were not provided in a timely manner, and I provide my apology. However, those that have handhelds can look this up at the State Department, one of the documents, one side of the documents called Accessible Instructional Materials, AIM. And at the document number, if you put it in the search engine, as I wrote on your papers, everybody, people, chair, and members of this committee, education policy, it's MDE-06-02-02. That's how you find it. You just put that number into the Minnesota Department of Education search engine. That's a content ID number. You will find it. You won't have to search for it. I come to testify because I support special education. However, I'm not quite sure how special it is, because in two years ago they reset special education in the name of disability at Harvard, called now aim.cas.org. They took new federal funding, and now universities are designed for everybody. So as far as us funding special ed, if universal design applies to all learners, then really are we going down the right road? If you're going to put together a group regarding that push on this, unless you implement, quote, selection, acquisition, and use, if you go to the Special Education Assistive Technology to the legislature on January 22nd, 2018, dated on pages 9, 10, 29, and 34, say selection, acquisition, and use. And what does that all mean? The State Department could explain it if they yield to the question. And that could be at a later time, or you could talk to them about it. Also, if you go to page 14 of that document, under number 4, quote, update the MDE manual. Minnesota will lead the project to update the MDE manual. This manual was updated in 2003. Updates should be included in the manual section addressing universal design for learning, accessible instructional materials, AIM, at the IFSP technology trend one-to-one initiative, students, environments, tasks, and tools, called SET. I assure you, gentlemen and women here in audience, that these items do apply to three academies, the blind, the deaf blind, and the perpetrator, because they're quasi. They're a school district and a state agency. Minnesota Statute 16E.03, Subdivision 9. Now, last but least, for the bill, the Deaf and Deafblind Commission. I spoke at the Deaf, Blind, and Blind Commission approximately a month and a half ago. They have a mission statement to support deaf and deafblind. However, this bill is lacking twice exceptional, which is in Minnesota Statute 120B15, which is a lingual word, and print disabled. My suggestion in the future or in this session today that there be an oral amendment that the legislature would appoint somebody to represent those individuals. Because if there are underrepresented groups, then somebody needs to be at the meeting, because 504 is likely the potential of your handout on the back page here. That one for the audience is a State Department document. They took it off their webpage. But if somebody wants to write the page down that's listening, it's at, where's my papers? Here it is here. I'm just going to give the short of it. Be glad to provide it with everybody else. And it's found at the website called lcsc.org. Minnesota has a yearly event called the Three C's. And they talk about accessibility. And as you notice on this document, I highlighted the area. And by the way, school districts decide if they're eligible. Well, unless a doctor says you have organic dysfunction. And that gets into the print disability area. So do they effectively understand the printed word? I found out it's not that you can read well. The end goal is, do you understand the content? So that's why when documents read out loud for me, for instance, I can do better with grasping my future education, employment for independent living. So again, that's my suggestion. You can go with you out with it. And if anybody wants the direct links, I tried to send this message early this morning, about 1 o'clock. It wouldn't send, but I'd be glad to forward those to any individuals about these documents. And if the State Department wanted to talk about the print disabled, I believe the Minnesota Department of Education, not the Academy for the Blind and Deaf, are looking to help to improve the accessibility for people, quote, print disabled, unquote, even though they're mixed in with the blind. That's my suggestion. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Representative Kunesh-Pradeen, do you have a question for Mr. Heller?
No, for the author, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Welcome, Ms. Gilbert. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Cloud Public Schools. And I want to apologize for not talking to you about this bill earlier, but I thought there was some merit in actually having a smaller group take a look at this, and that it might be easier, which is why I haven't weighed in at this point. But now that it appears that we are going to expand the size of the committee, I do think and agree with Representative Carlos Mariani that there is some merit to having a representative from the cities of the first class, because we do have in total the greatest cross-subsidy. We also have probably the most tuition billing. And we have, aside from the intermediates, we probably have the highest number of level 3 and 4 special education students as well. So I think that having representation on the committee will bring some merit and some of the detail work that will have to be looked at on the committee.
Thank you very much, Ms. Gilbert. Representative Kunesh-Pradeen, a question for the author.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, as we heard about adding additional groups in this, I'm wondering if any of our BIE schools, our Bureau of Indian Education schools, the 4, might be included in here. They do receive federal funds, and I'm wondering if that would if it would be appropriate to add them to this, into the conversation as well.
Representative Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Kunesh-Pradeen, I think that would be appropriate. I'd be happy to. I think this is an important conversation, and, you know, I think all perspectives are important and to be included in the conversation.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair.
And, of course, members, keep in mind that this bill is just moving, getting started. I think the Senate has a different approach to this file So we'll have to see how this all plays out. But we don't want to exclude any group from participating in this kind of working group, study group, task force, whatever it turns out to be. Closing comments, Representative Christensen.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for the conversation. I think everyone realizes how important conversation this is, and I appreciate the engagement going forward. Madam Chair, I renew my motion 2846 to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. The Chair will renew Representative Christensen's motion that 2846, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to Government Operations. Members, our last item of business today is a summary of the 2018 legislative reports, and I'll call forth Mr. Adosh Uni, and he may have others joining him. Mr. Uni, in the matter of time, I think that you should highlight data disaggregation, the Information Technology Certification Partnership Report, the High School League, the mandate relief, the restrictive procedures and assistive technology for the most part. And, you know, members, what we can do is if you have a yearning desire to learn more, you know, you can access these reports on the web because all the addresses are given. But we can always call Mr. Uni up when we have some lag in a meeting and have him pick up. But members, you will notice, and welcome Mr. Uni to the table. I apologize for springing this on you, but members, if you look at the summary, we've got the capital loan report, and that's more of a finance issue, but you are welcome to access it. It is, as he says, no active capital loan projects, no account balances in that particular program. The certification incentive revenue is important from the perspective that if you look at the chart, you will notice the number of certificates that were awarded and in the various areas. And I think you can do that on your own, and we'll come back to that at some time when we have a bill perhaps related to that. But, Mr. Uni, welcome. Say your name for the record. And please begin with data disaggregation, because I think that's been an area, you know, that's new, and you've really had to dig into that.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations. As you can see, staff from MDE, we're going to be tag-teaming the reports as there's a wide range. And for data disaggregation, I will kick it off to my colleague, Caitlin Snyder.
Welcome, Ms. Snyder, to the committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Caitlin Snyder. I'm the Deputy Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Education. For this report, pursuant to Minnesota Statutes 120B31 and 120B35, the department was required to report on a summary of efforts and feedback to implement the legislation requiring collection and reporting of detailed demographics. The department typically refers to this legislation as data disaggregation, but you may also know it as the All Kids Count Act. To assist in implementation, the department received a federal grant. And through our stakeholder process, we have reached out to 93 organizations and 41 school districts. Through this process, we've heard about the benefits of increased data for interventions at schools, as well as a number of concerns about potential negative unintended consequences. Those concerns typically fall into two main buckets. From the American Indian community, we are hearing about concerns about the erosion of indigenous identity and a concern with varying definitions between the state and federal definition of American Indian. There's a concern with the federal undercounting of American Indian students as well, and that's because if a student identifies as multiracial, they fall into the multiracial bucket versus falling into the American Indian accountability. There are a number of letters from American Indian tribes and schools included in the report for further information. The second bucket of concerns that we are hearing through the stakeholder process falls into data privacy concerns. We're talking about gathering pretty sensitive information here, and there are a number of communities that are concerned about they have just a fundamental distrust of information, of institutions handling this information. The report states that policymakers will need to strike a balance between the positive intentions of more data and the perception of potential negative impacts. Finally, the legislative report includes a number of recommendations for implementation as well as technical clarifying changes to statute. And I would stand for any questions.
And thank you, Ms. Schneider. Your report was very thorough. Representative Lee, I think you led the charge on this proposal. Did you have any questions that you wanted to ask of Ms. Schneider? Because I'd like to take member questions as we move forward and then at the end hear from those in the audience who might want to weigh in on any one of these reports. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the only question that I have is, how has the department worked with our American Indian community to address some of the concerns that they have, or if you have any recommendations in place for the legislature?
Ms. Snyder.
The department has worked with the American Indian community by meeting with the Tribal Nations Education Commission, by working with the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, as well as with our Office of Indian Education. We also held a meeting in December that was specifically focused on American Indian members, where we reached out to Indian education directors and tribal members. We had about 40 people in the room that were representatives of the American Indian community. And the legislative recommendations are fairly technical. There's a reference in the statute to the 4- and 6-year graduation rate. We would like to change that to just say graduation rate to align with our ESSA plan. There is a reference to disaggregating Asian American Pacific Islander data, but the federal government has broken out Asian American and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander into two separate categories, so we would like to correct that reference.
Representative Lee?
That's all.
And what she's pointing out is this difference between how the federal government identifies and state, and so that's caused some complications for this proposal that was brought forth, but the department has been working very hard on it. Is there anyone in the audience who wanted to respond to this data disaggregation report? Okay, good. We'll move on to the next one, I think, would be the certification partnership report.
Madam Chair, Adosh Uni, Department of Education. Madam Chair, I wanted to just verify that you were speaking about the partnership. We had the Mouse Corporation and not the Career Certification Incentive Revenue Program?
Correct.
The Information Technology Certification Report covers an appropriation that was given in the 2015 legislature to flow through to a competitive grant for a corporation to partner with schools around the state to provide programming that would allow them to get industry-recognized badges. We reviewed several applications, and a company out of New York named Mouse, Mouse Inc., they had a strong relationship with Best Buy as well, so we knew that they would have a strong local connection. We worked with them and provided them with lists of schools that they could contact, but really they were taking the charge here with contacting the schools. We're awarded a contract to engage with up to 200 schools in Minnesota to provide these skill certifications or, for them, badges, and these are in the STEM and IT fields. They began recruiting in January of 2016. The recruitment was actually suspended in January of 2017 because the contract was ending in June 30th, 2017, and I'll talk about a few of the complications from that. In just over a year's time, Mouse trained 166 educators, so the idea was that the educators in the schools would really be set up to deliver the programming for the students, not to have Mouse individuals in all these schools, so really trying to make effective use of resources that they had. They reached an estimated 1,000 students. There were some complications with that in terms of logging data. We don't really know the true number, but what we do know is 1,000. It could be much more than that. And they collectively earned 130 certifications and submitted sufficient evidence of completion of 2,957 modules. The high schools used Malice's educational programming in multiple ways. They integrated it into existing classes in the areas of business, computer science, engineering, technology. Some schools use it for after-school independent or club independent study or club programs, and some schools used broad implementation across multiple subject areas or focused just on one or two courses. As I mentioned, there were some complications with the programming, and a lot of that came because of the timeline. A lot of schools maybe put up some resistance to implementing the programming because they knew that after a year, year and a half, the programming would end. So they were apprehensive about applying some of their on-the-ground resources to programming that they wouldn't have support for after the year and a half because of the nature of the legislation. Another finding is that although a lot of modules, you can see a lot of modules were completed, but not a lot of certifications mm-hmm. were happening. We had a lot of modules completed and submitted, but teachers awarded a lot fewer credentials than expected. Unfortunately, the trainers tried to work with the educators to emphasize the teacher trainers working through the course of the program, but unfortunately, a lot of the credentials weren't logged at the end of the program, and I think staff believes that that, again, is a consequence of the timeline of the program, and that's just the nature of it. You know, this is a learning opportunity. This is the first of its kind that we implemented in the schools, so our staff has a lot of understanding of what the complications were should a proposal like this come up in the future. So the contract stipulated that no more than half of the schools be served in the 7-county Twin Cities area, and no more than half in greater Minnesota, but it turned out that out of the 98 schools recruited, 38 were in the Twin Cities metro and 60 were in greater Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Oney. Are there questions from any members? Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your report. Can you clarify me the difference between a badge and a certification? Were these certifications supposed to be industry recognized so the student could take it into post-secondary, or is a badge different?
Mr. Oney.
Madam Chair, Representative Haley, I should have been a little bit clearer about that. They're all certifications. It's just through the MOUSE program. They're called badges.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to clarify again, when a badge wasn't awarded, did the student have to pass a test then, I would assume, or something to show that they got the credential? And is that why the badges weren't, or was it a logging issue? I wasn't clear on that.
Madam Chair, Representative, I imagine it's a host of issues, mainly because of the timeline, mainly because it was compressed. I imagine some of the teacher trainers didn't get the students over the line with mm-hmm. completing the necessary modules for each certification. So we've got the MOUSE has it logged of students who maybe half completed a certification. I don't know if every certification came with an assessment at the end or if it was just comprised of completing a set of modules. I think it's probably a combination of both for different pathways. So it's really a complication of the timeline. I think teachers fully understanding in that timeline the amount of modules that they had to get through, MOUSE maybe not having a cadre of individuals being able to go out to the 98 schools. But I think our staff fully understands what the barriers were to full implementation and full success for the program. So should something like this come up in the future, I think we are, with the current team, able to advise any winning recipient of a grant to implement a program like this, what the barriers were and how they can achieve better implementation where students are getting the certifications to represent the amount of modules they completed.
Can I have one more follow-up? Thank you, Madam Chair. So just one last follow-up then. So I understand when we need to pilot and try things and figure out what works and what doesn't. So is your recommendation now to continue a model like this, being that we all recognize we need these types of skills in our students and we want them to have certificates to go on to post-secondary? What is your recommendation at this point?
Madam Chair, Representative, first of all, I'm not in a position to recommend a continuation or further funding of the program, but I can say that we're positioned to provide better support than in the past. We know that there's demand from industry for students with these certifications. We know Best Buy was very excited to partner with MOUSE. MOUSE was very excited to offer their services. They were disappointed how the rollout came, and that is just because of the timelines and them not having worked in a state like Minnesota. We have a lot of things that are different than other states, especially local control. But I would say that if the legislature were to put forward a program like this, we would be better positioned to work with a program like this than we were in the past.
Representative Rare.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Even with some of the timing issues, very few of these badges giving out, do we know, is there any information, will these badges have any value to those who received them? And thus, for if we do something like this again, will there be an incentive for kids to enroll to get these badges? Will they have value to help them out later on?
Mr. Uni?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes. These are badges that were verified to be able to be posted on places like LinkedIn. I know Geek Squad accepts a lot of these badges, and I imagine if Geek Squad accepts these badges, other local industries in the areas of STEM and IT would accept them as well.
Thank you. Any other questions for members? Anyone in the audience who wanted to address this particular report? Members, we're going to wait with the High School League because there are some bills that have been introduced, maybe one is even mine, on the High School League and the recommendations from the auditor. So we'll pick up on that when we have the bill heard, and we'll ensure that you see the comments that were made because they are really very good, and we do want to follow up on that. So, Mr. Uni, would you go to the education-related mandates? I found this quite amusing, and members, you might too, that a survey was done, but we didn't have very good participation in response to what they would like us to get rid of. So, Mr. Uni, would you proceed with that report? Ms. Snyder?
Madam Chair,
that's yours.
Ms. Snyder.
Thank you.
The statute requires the commissioner to review all education-related mandates every 4 years to identify mandates that fail to promote public education. So to complete this report, we surveyed superintendents and charter school directors, and we asked them to identify mandates that do not promote public education, mandates that they would consider unfunded, or mandates that they consider duplicative of other requirements. So we sent 940 emails and received responses from 11 individuals. So that's a 1.1% response rate. So that should be kept in mind when we review this report. There were 17 mandates identified respondents as not promoting public education that are listed in your summary. And further explanation as to the rationale is listed in the legislative report.
Thank you very much. Other questions, members? Representative Erdahl, number one.
Well, thank you for your explanation of this. And, you know, I could be fairly irritated about this if it was more than 1.1%. I fail to believe that the majority of superintendents and, you know, school boards in the state of Minnesota believe that being able to exhibit knowledge of civics and government is not worthwhile. Mm-hmm.
Well, Representative Erdahl, that was one respondent, I believe. Is that not correct, Ms. Schneider? Yes, we have to emphasize that.
Well,
one respondent.
And, Madam Chair, that's why I prefaced by saying, if this were more than just such a simple, small number, I would be irritated. So I'm not today.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. I think the last one we will do today because... I'm sorry. Representative Ward.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
Madam Chair, I just want to comment, too, that with such a small response, I don't know how we can put any credibility to this. And how do we go about getting more response that it could be more valid? I'd appreciate if we would look into that, please.
Thank you, Representative Ward. Yes, I was rather disappointed, too. The assistive technology, let's touch on that one. Mr. Cordy, is that your area?
It is, Madam Chair.
I was concerned about that because I really appreciated the parent survey. But, members, I think you recall from last year that we had a bill, and I see our testifier in the audience, whereby we were going to do much more than we ended up doing, which was a study. And, Mr. Cordy, would you deliver the highlights of the study?
Sure. Madam Chair, members, Darren Cordy, I'm an assistant commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Education. You're correct. So there was legislation last year that required us to do a study and create a legislative report about the use of assistive technology in districts for students with disabilities. As the chair mentioned, as part of that process, we did a parent survey, and we did that in partnership with Pacer, who was a fantastic partner in this entire project, I would say. But we had about 250 respondents through that survey, and fewer than half felt that assistive technology was meeting or moderately meeting their students' needs in the IEP or IFSP. So obviously that's a number that we think is low and merits some concern. And we, as part of that, collected information about what people saw as barriers to receiving assistive technology. And what we found was that most frequently they mentioned that the school employees that were creating or working with the students just lacked knowledge about what the appropriate assistive technology was. We also did a school district survey, and you can see the results listed there about the total number of cases of use of assistive technology being considered and where it was a component, as well as the different types of assistive technology that we most often see in school. So that was helpful to get more of a statewide perspective around the use of assistive technology. And then there was an advisory group that was pulled together, which made several recommendations, and you can see them listed there.
Yes.
But as you can see, several of them, you know, don't require legislation. It's just a better job that we can do at MDE, and a better job we can do with our partners in providing guidance, training, and just general education out there for teachers, special ed directors, parents, and students about their rights and obligations when it comes to use of assistive technology. We also have our special education director here who participated and helped facilitate this group. So if you have more questions in detail, we'd be happy to have her come up and chat as well.
Thank you, Mr. Cordy. I think this is going to be a continuing discussion. It is something that I certainly will consider adding to Representative Christensen's Special Education Working Group, because assistive technology is so important in this world of technology for our students who seek that kind of help. And we want to assure their parents are getting that. So we'll come back to this. Member, is there any pressing question in regard to assistive technology? And I'm sorry, I'm not going to call on testifiers either at this point, because even though I don't think we have a meeting coming up, we need to abide by our timeline. So seeing nothing further, thank you very much, Department. We've been kind of dangling you, but we'll get back to some of these topics. With that, members, the meeting is adjourned.